Hey everyone, it's John Krasinski from the John Krasinski Show on the Talk North Podcast Network, inviting you to come by Tuttle's in Hopkins on December 2nd for a live recording of the John Krasinski Show. Join me and Jim Suhan as we talk about the Red Hot Timberwolves, the NBA, and all things basketball. Can't wait to see everyone at Tuttle's in Hopkins at 7 p.m. on December 2nd.
One of the things I love about this show is that we have some slow weeks where we just tell stories and have a lot of fun. But this week, we have real news to talk about. Byron Buxton signs a long-term deal. The Twins make some bullpen decisions. They get somebody from the Cubs organization. And we have a great photo on Super 70 Sports of Kent Herbeck and Gary Gaetti wearing very fancy modern-looking hat. So we will actually get to that and get Roy Smalley's take on what minor league baseball used to be like. But we have to start with Byron Buxton today here on Chin Music. This is our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. The show stars Roy Smalley, former Twins great, current Twins broadcaster, Lavelle Neal, Star Tribune sports columnist, and myself, Jim Suhan. Let's get right to it, gentlemen. Let's start. And Lavelle, you wrote a column about it today, so let's start with you on the Buxton deal. What did you think of it? I wrote a column the day before saying, hey, I love the fact they locked him up to what I think is a reasonable deal. You're a little more detail-oriented on the deal that got signed.
Yeah, I was. Now, first of all, I just want to say I'm pleased that the Twins were able to sign Buxton. I just thought it would be a PR leap storm all over them if they end up getting rid of Byron Buxton and Jose Barrios within the same year. I just think that would be something it would take years for his organization to live through. And, you know, they had to get creative to get this deal done. Just my one concern, I wrote about it today, was the bonus structure. If he is an MVP in any year of this deal, he gets $8 million bonus. Then there's a sliding scale. It starts if he's 6th through 10th, he gets $3 million a year. Then it goes up to $4 million, $5 million, $6 million bonus if he, based on where he finishes MVP voting. And I was just pointing out that I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact that our votes as members of the BBWAA are being used to get these deals done and provide incentives for players. And I told the story about the Curt Schilling situation back in 2007 because I was there at the Nashville, that horrible hotel, that Opryland Hotel. God, I hate that place. And Schilling told a bunch of people, yeah, I got a $1 million clause in my deal. If I get one vote for MVP, I get $1 million. For Cy Young, I get $1 million. Maybe I'll bribe a writer and offer to split the money with him, you know.
And that's why I don't vote for this stuff anymore.
And so, you know, Jack O'Connell was the Secretary of Treasury, and Bob Dutton of the Kansas City Star was the president that year.
Both good people.
Great people. And we passed a rule saying anybody has a clause like this in their contract could not be eligible for awards. Well, that went over well with the agents. I mean, we were just being taunted and mocked and ridiculed in the lobby. Like, when's your next interview with one of my players going to take place, Lavelle? You know, they're like, yeah, I don't want to see you guys try to enforce that rule. Blah. It was just 2 days later, Dutton, his famous quote was like, it's like we took a fork to a gunfight. and so we tabled that decision. But I just think, you know, now that it's such a detailed structure, bonus structure for MVP award, that, you know, some people who cover Buxton going, if he's having a good year, you know, are you going to be tempted? Because usually, even if it's on the crummy team and you're filling out the ballot, filling out 10, you usually throw in your guy if he's having a good year at 10th, you know. What happens if Buxton gets enough, you know, votes and he gets $3 million? How's that going to look?
Then he gets $3 million.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Hey, just but I think some because I think some reporters will have a little bit of will be a little uncomfortable with that hovering over them as they fill out a ballot.
It's why reporters shouldn't vote on things that affect players financially one way or another. Roy, you made a really good point. We're talking in the lobby here today.
He did.
I'll let you explain it.
Well, a couple of things in addition to – I'll get to the point that point in a second because it's a little bit sequential for me.
Sure.
The first – my first thought is thank goodness they did this.
Yeah.
I mean, really thank goodness that they did this. On behalf of the Twins – thank goodness, you know, for the Twins, Thank goodness for Byron. Thank goodness for all of us fans here in Minnesota that we're going to see this, once in a generational type of player when he's on the field, get to play for the next 7 years and maybe finish out his career here. So that it's great for all of those reasons, but this one in particular, I guarantee you that he is going to, in one of these years, he's going to be on the field the whole season. And it's going to be astonishing what he does. Even if it's only 1 year, if they had traded him, I don't care who they could have gotten back, and he had the year that he's going to have, that he is going to have at some point in time for somebody else, to Lavelle's point, Lavelle said he couldn't live it down or live through it. Both of those things. They couldn't live it down. Right. And it would be really tough to live through it. So I'm ecstatic, for all of those reasons. I mean, it's great that he's going to be here. So as to the point that Lavelle was making about all the incentives, it takes an awful lot of trust. We were talking, Lavelle and Jim and I were talking about whether there's there's an opt-out clause in there, for Byron. And I'm trying to think, okay, why would you have an opt-out clause in a deal like this? It's such a good deal because it's enough money. It's the kind of deal I wish they should give every player. There's a certain base salary. It's going to be a lot, but a certain base salary. And then to get what you deserve, you got to perform. Not what you did last year and the year before and the year before. Here's the big money year by year because of what you did before. Now, if you continue to do what you did for the next 5 years, then there's all these great incentives. I love the whole structure of that. But because of this structure, there's a lot of trust that Byron has to put in the Twins organization to get some of this extra dough, get some of the incentives. He's not going to win the MVP if the Twins are a last place team. He's not. So he is putting his faith and a lot of potential money in the hands of the Twins brain trust to put a team on the field that contends enough that when he has this big year, you can't help but vote for him. And because of the conflicts, the controversy about whether is this player of the year MVP, most valuable player that helped your team win, or player of the year statistically. In this era, that's not going to be solved by some guy winning the MVP from last place team. It's just not. And so he's putting a lot of, so it'd be interesting to see if he has an opt-out clause, because I was trying to think, what would be the reason he would want to opt out of a contract like this? I mean, if he's hurt all the time, he's going to get paid big dough. If he's not hurt all the time, I think he's perfectly happy putting all of his faith in himself to get you to make a whole bunch more money. So why would you ever want to opt out? It's clear that he wanted to stay with the Twins. It's absolutely clear that is important to him, and the Twins did what they needed to do to get him here. But there's a big trust factor there that will enter into what he's able to do incentive wise.
Agreed. By the way, just to go back to what Lavelle was talking about, the awkwardness of writers covering people they're voting for who could benefit financially from their votes reminds me, a friend of mine was standing, it might have been Bob Nightingale. I might be repeating something out of turn here, but I'm going to do it anyway. Somebody I knew was talking to Dykstra in front of his locker during one of Dykstra's best seasons. And they're sitting there, and Dykstra looks across the room and sees a writer and goes, God, I hate that SOB, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Just cusses the guy up and down. He's like, I hate that. I can't believe he writes what he does. And my friend, might have been Nightingale, might have been somebody else, turns to him and goes, he's got MVP vote this year. And Dykstra walks across and goes, hey, Lenny Dykstra, good to meet you.
Well, those are all really salient points. And what I wonder, Lavelle, is would a writer really vote for somebody just to get him, just to help get him the money? I mean, I love you writers, you know, but but seriously, I mean, I kind of agree with, you know, Jim's point. It was, well, what you said, what happens if, you know, a guy, he can make $3 million. And Jim said, well, he makes $3 million. Yeah. I mean, that's how he's going to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and he's going to get it because he deserved the votes. And if you don't think he deserves the votes, don't vote for him.
I like to think that, for the most part, most of the voters approach this with integrity and honesty and are able to separate what could be, what the player could make off their vote versus what's the right thing to do. So I just want to say at the beginning, but you never know when you have X amount of people voting for these awards that one or two may, you know, end up, you know, you're talking to a guy who left Pedro Martinez off his ballot for MVP back in 1999 or 2000.
And seems strangely proud of it.
And then and the other guy, George King, purposely left Pedro out because he was trying to get Jeter to win. So, I mean,
yeah, there, no, I
there's
know
a
that
hidden
kind of
agenda there.
Yeah, now, and there's a lot of writers that, you know, didn't vote for guys because they hated them, you know, one way. I mean, that happens.
Jim Rice
trying
to get in the Hall of Fame. Jim Rice, everybody didn't like Jim Rice because he was a not good guy to deal with, right?
Although, you know, Burt was really hard on writers during his career, and he got in. And every time I talked to him,
it took a while. Last year.
It took a while.
But everybody,
PR campaign.
But everybody I talked to about Burt, who I knew, who had a vote, who didn't vote for him, most of them didn't really know Burt. And it's not like Burt had treated them badly and they weren't voting about him. They were like, they got, to me, caught up too much in, because I thought Burt was a Hall of Famer, and I thought it was an easy decision. The writers I talked to who didn't vote for Burt were all doing it on like super analytic reasons, and they hadn't seen him pitch live, and they were kind of younger people, and they were just saying, okay, yeah, but the ERA and this, and I'm like, yeah, but the guy, when he retired, he was like fourth in the all time in strikeouts. I mean,
3,700 strikeouts.
So, and I don't want to go all Hall of Fame talk here because we have other Twins issues to get to, and we can get more into the Hall of Fame stuff. Oh, by the way, I need to mention our next show, December 7th, 6 o'clock. Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. That's again December 7th, 6 p.m. Pizza Luce, Eden Prairie. Come out. You can ask us live questions. We will take, you know, we have a great time at these shows. Great food, great drink, all that stuff. And we'll get more into the Hall of Fame stuff when we're there, as well as more of the lockout and everything else going on in baseball. But my point is that I just have not. When you have a large voting base, it ain't going to be perfect.
No.
And it might not be pretty. Because if you have 90% of the voters who are very ethical and thoughtful, that means you have 10% who could do anything, and they might not be ethical, and it might not be thoughtful. And that's why you have the large voting base, so the cranks, their votes aren't as significant, but you're going to have them. If you have a large voting base, you're not going to control quality all that well.
You're right. Exactly right. I have a funny story about this clause, though, because I was talking with a colleague last night about the Buxton contract, and he pointed out that Miguel Cabrera currently has a clause in his contract that if he finishes in the top 10 in MVP voting, his salary for 2023 would be guaranteed. And we all know that Miguel is on the downside of his career now. So the person I talked to joked and said, we should get a group of us and approach Alex Alavila, the general manager of the Tigers, and say, give us $5 million or we're going to vote Miguel Cabrera into the top 10.
And that is something we can talk about more on, you know, when we're at Pizza Luce, we can get more into whether voters should be voted for that. For today, let's go back to the big picture here. They signed Byron Buxton.
Yep.
And I think that is a great deal. And the nature of negotiations is neither side's going to get everything they want. And anybody looking from the outside can say, I don't like this or that about the contract. The big picture is they signed Byron Buxton. Now, so the follow-up question, which I'm going to get to next, is does this indicate to you that they're going to try really hard to win? Or does this indicate to you that they can now have a slow rebuild while Byron is on the roster? It is time to thank our sponsors who helped make this show and this network run. Thank you to Memorial Blood Centers.
Local Memorial Blood Centers is looking for folks who want to help. It takes a generous type of person to give an hour out of their day to donate a pint of blood. But in the spirit of giving, it saves lives. In this era, when our supply chains are backed up, don't let blood be one of the things we're running out of. Give blood and help out the folks in your community, especially if you are blood type B negative, which is in short supply. Please visit mbc.org to schedule an appointment for Memorial Blood Centers or call 1-888-448-3253.
We'd also like to thank 11 Wells Distillery. I've been there. Lavelle has been there. Lavelle's been there multiple times. Really good whiskey, really good rum, really good liqueurs. Cool place to hang out, especially convenient if you're going to go to an event at the XL Energy Center.
Yes, and they still are promoting their holiday market that takes place this Saturday, December 4th. Next Saturday, the 11th, and also December 18th, you could purchase food from local vendors there, like grab a taco. You can have an artisanal Bloody Mary. Buy a bottle of whiskey. The Minnesota 13 is an excellent whiskey. It's the holiday season. You can buy the Minnesota 13 and give it away as a gift. What a concept. You also enjoy a cocktail, and there will be live music too. So that's 11 to 3 in each of the next three Saturdays, the holiday market at 11 Wells Distillery.
Cool. Thanks also to Better Edge.
Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun, compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge in a number of different sports and event competitions. In fact, you can follow me. My username is Sonny Everett on this platform to see what my picks are. Use code CHIN for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting betteredge.com. That's BETTOREdge.com.
And as always, thank you to Minnesota Propane.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
All right, let's get to some other Twins decisions. We're going to talk more about Buxton at Pizza Luce. Interesting decisions. Not surprising, obviously, that they bring back their setup men, but they, you know, a couple of intriguing pitchers they let go, and then they picked up Trevor McGill from the Cubs, who had horrible numbers this year, but apparently throws very hard. Roy, your first thoughts on some of the bullpen maneuvering?
The only thing that surprised me was non-tendering Juan Minaya. I thought Minaya showed really great, good potential stuff. He was throwing 95 miles an hour with some movement. He had a good slider. When he was getting those two pitches over, he was almost unhittable because it went with one of the best split fingers you're going to see. That was a devastating pitch, the thing came up there at 90 miles an hour and dropped a foot and a half. I mean, I will tell you as a hitter, that pitch is extremely difficult to hit, especially when a guy's throwing 95 and the splitter comes up there looking like the same thing. So there's three pitches. All of them were quality in my view. His issue has always been that he walks people. When he walked people with the Twins this year, it wasn't good. When he was throwing strikes, nobody hit him. And so I felt like, okay, this guy, this is not exactly Dennis Eckersley, but he's got he's shown stuff to work with. And, you know, unless you thought, you know, there's nothing I can do to help him throw strikes better. You know, I mean, he's always going to be that way. I mean, that's the only thing that I could think of that would be a reason not to keep stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm pro Juan Minaya as well. I liked him when I first saw his off-speed stuff, and I'm like, this is a guy that can become a factor in a bullpen. Yeah, he does have problems with walks from time to time, but I think he's an effective pitcher, and he missed all. He didn't pitch in the majors in 2020 at all. I wonder if there's something else going on behind the scenes, because he had a 3.90 ERA in 2019 with the White Sox, and then didn't pitch in 2020. And he actually had a 2.48 ERA with the Twins in 29 games. I just think that's an arm that you can find some place to use, you know, especially the way the Twins bullpen was rolling last year. So,
it was 2.48 Lavelle, the ERA. I mean, which is terrific in this day and age. And most of those runs that boosted up that average up to 2.48 came in very few appearances. So it was, you know, when you only pitch, you know, what did he have? How many innings?
29
innings
in the majors. Yeah. 29 games, 40 innings.
40 innings with the Twins.
Yep.
You know, last year in 40 innings, if you had two bad outings, that's going to ruin your ERA unless you pitch like crazy the rest of the time. And he pitched like crazy the rest of the time, 2.48.
Yeah, and I'm looking here. He had a 4.5 walks per nine innings.
Right, too much.
I'm sure that's the one. That's it was actually the second highest of his career. But he also struck out 9.7 batters per nine. I don't know. It seems like that's something to work with there. I would keep. I don't know what his arbitration situation was. I don't know if that played into it at all. But I would have figured out a way to sign him for $850,000 and say I'm going to work with this guy and see if I can get him to throw more strikes. The one move from yesterday that I was happy was Caleb Thielbar, who left baseball for a couple years and decided to get back in and return to the majors, signed for $1.3 million. I think that's great for Caleb for the path he's taken throughout his career. I think he was going into real estate there for a while, but he came back. He's been effective. He's figured out a way to neutralize right-handed hitters, and he was an asset last year. Good for Caleb.
Yeah, very good for him.
The pride of Randolph, Minnesota.
Great story.
They also picked up Trevor McGill. Interesting guy, big guy. His strikeouts per nine innings in at every level have been 10 or better. Decent ERAs through the minors until last year, you know, 5 ERA at Triple-A and then a 8 ERA in very limited time in the majors. Obviously, he was not ready to pitch in the major leagues last year. But power arm, 6'8", 250 pounds. You know, this is probably the right kind of gamble to take, I would think, Roy.
I don't know anything about him other than basically what you just recited. But when you throw hard and you strike out 10 guys in every nine innings, then, you know, to use Lavelle's term, it's something to work with. And the reason you have a 5 ERA in the minor leagues or an 8 ERA in the big leagues when you've got that kind of power arm, there are only two reasons. One is you can't throw anything over the plate. You know, it's ball four, 3-1, you know, groove something and inning over for you, you know, type of thing. Or you don't have a secondary pitch that you can get over. And so all you throw is hard. And we all, you know big league hitters, if they know hard is coming, then you're going to get hit. So, but this is kind of my point about Manaea. If you got a big, strong guy that can throw, I mean, I don't know what is, but let's say he throws above 95, then, and you're willing to, you know, try to work with him to work him through either one of those other two scenarios that I just mentioned, then why wouldn't you kind of see if you could work with a guy that's got three really good pitches that's around the plate most of the time? But in any event, I like the deal because you get a power arm. You can't have enough power arms. Give it a shot.
Well, let me see your reaction to this one. There's been an update on the Trevor McGill situation.
Oh, what do we got?
All right. They claimed him from the Cubs on Monday.
Right.
They non-tendered him yesterday.
Right. But that was obviously a procedural move so they can send him to the minor leagues without exposing him to waivers.
Yeah, so I believe that's
but that makes him move. That makes him a free agent, right?
That makes him technically a free agent. The assumption is when you acquire somebody and then make that move, the assumption is you have a handshake agreement on that you're going to pay him, you know, like a quasi major leaguer to go start in the minors.
So it doesn't count against a 40 man. I don't think. Yeah. And the other thing, they did not come to an agreement with Taylor Rogers, Mitch Garver, or Luis Arias. So right now they're all eligible for arbitration next year,
which is fine.
That was going to happen. They were going to tender them contracts. The contracts were not going to be knock your socks off contracts the first go around.
They did sign Tyler Duffy for $3.8 million for next year, and Jarrell Cotton for $700,000. I don't know much about Jarrell, but so right now they got three arbitration cases that they could still settle on before.
Sure. Yeah, arbitration is not that big a deal. You got the player.
They may not even be arbitration after this collective bargaining agreement is figured out here in the next couple months.
Jake Cave goes the way of Williams Acedillo. He gave him some really good stretches. I just always thought that he was going to be a fourth or fifth outfielder in the big leagues at best. Any thoughts on him?
I like Jake Cave as a guy, but he's one of those people that if you need him to play for a week or 2 weeks, he's going to get exposed. I think coming in as a fill-in, late-in defensive guy, even if I say that, though, he's taken bad routes to balls. He's made base running blunders. His game has had some rough edges that have not been smoothed out yet. I think they only – I was surprised that they put him on the 40-man before the 40-man deadline. But I'm thinking that at that time they had not signed Buxton yet. And right. Maybe they were worried that if we end up trading Buxton, we're going to need to have someone around to play center. So once the Buxton deal got done, I think that gave them the flexibility to move on or move into another direction with Cave. So
tell you what.
And also signing Buxton also moves – Royce Lewis definitely to the infield, and Lewis
and Martin.
And Martin,
yes,
definitely to the infield. So I mean, you can forget all that stuff about, hey, he's a good shortstop, but you can see him play center field. What right. doesn't matter?
No,
it doesn't matter. They're going to play somewhere else now.
That's another column. The winners and losers from the Byron Buxton signing.
You know, the thing about Jake Cave too, and I agree with everything that Lavelle said and what you said, Jim. The thing that really got him for me. Another left-hand hitter.
Yeah.
And they just – they're left-handed heavy anyway, especially in the outfield. If they don't sign Byron Buxton, and you got Kepler, and you got Larnick, and you've got Kirilloff, and you got Cave, and then we'll save the day right-handed with who's it? Right. With Ref Snyder,
right?
So
right.
It's like, yeah, you know,
need a right-handed hitting
they
outfielder.
They need a right-handed hitting outfielder, and I was really hoping that that it was going to be solved last year, but it I'm having a bad morning here.
The one guy who's right-handed hitter who could play the outfield is Brent Rooker.
Rooker would step up and really show some signs that he was going to be it. He's still question mark to me.
I still wish Lamont Wade was here. I liked the kid. I thought he could play all three outfield positions. He actually takes good at bats, and he was picking up first base to give himself some more flexibility. And he ended up going into the playoffs with the San Francisco Giants, didn't he? I think he was in the playoff roster.
Absolutely, yeah.
He did. He had a really good year.
Good for him. But I would have kept Lamont Wade over Cave.
Yeah, the other thing.
Another left-handed bat. But
yeah, you're right.
But a better left-handed bat.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, if you keep Cave, you can't trade Kepler. I mean, if you keep Lamont Wade, maybe you can make a deal. So that's the I agree with Lavelle in that way. And I hope I'm not being influenced by the fact that Lamont Wade went and had a really nice year. And now I say after the fact, I'm saying, oh, yeah, he should have done that.
I mean, I honestly didn't see this year coming from him.
I didn't either.
So I can't second guess too much on that front.
I think he had some clutch, some like late night pitch.
He did.
Late inning pinch inning heroics for them. He became like a late inning.
I wasn't sure he could drive the ball in the majors. And he did this year. Hey, you know what? Because we have a long show coming up December 7th at Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie, 6 o'clock start, I'm going to save some of the things I wanted to get to today, including the Rat and the Rex fantastic hats. We're going to talk about minor league baseball. We're going to get more into the Buxton ramifications and whether this team's going to compete or not. For today, I just want to thank our sponsors, thank everyone who listens to TalkNorth.com, and our great sales executive, Karen Cleary, as well as Brandon Morton, our longtime producer. Hey, thanks for listening. We will talk to you from Pizza Luce on December 7th at 6 o'clock.